This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
I took for granted every Saturday night with my rowdy friends and the love of my life.
Hey everyone, today's guest is Josh Fleming, lead vocalist and acoustic guitarist for the Dallas, Texas Americana alt-rock band, The Vandaliers. Together, we pull back the covers on the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan-favorite single, Every Saturday Night, taken from their 2022 self-titled fourth album. I recently got to spend a few weeks with Josh and the band on a UK tour, and the pleasure was all mine. What an immensely talented band and a great group of guys. Josh was very candid about the inspiration for Every Saturday Night. It was the isolation and loneliness of the pandemic that had Josh digging deep and wondering if he still wanted to do this thing called rock and roll. This song is a triumph for the Vandaliers. Not only has it become their most popular track, but it was written super quickly, without any time to question the arrangement, lyrics, or anything else about the song. Just goes to show you that not everything has to be completely thought out all of the time. Producer Eric Delagarde shines on this song, and while it may have been thrown together and recorded in a day, it sure doesn't sound like it. So for all this and a discussion about moonshine, don't you dare touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
What's up, Josh? I feel like I just saw you, and I did.
Hi, buddy. It's been a couple of weeks since we toured the UK. It was great.
That's right. Now, that was your second time there. Is that correct?
Yeah. Completely different than my first time.
Yes. I remember you saying that it was relatively, smaller shows than we were doing with Bowling for Soup over there.
Yeah.
You know, you guys were put in a position to open these shows that were not only huge, but two pretty established bands in the UK, and for an opening slot, and there was no local bands, no one before you. You were the first thing the audience saw, and you're playing to pretty packed houses. I thought you got a great response.
Yeah, we made a ton of fans. It was great. I think everybody, like we're a country band, but we're also a punk band, and people aren't used to things being equal parts of two things very often. So like, you go and we do these punk tours and everybody's like, why is this fucking country band on this bill? And then we'll go do country tours and they're like, why is this fucking punk band on this bill? Mm-hmm. And at no point in time am I ever in a position where I like have the ability to change for them. I just have to do what we do. And it works every time. And people, you know, have such a good time. By the end of the show, everybody gets it. But at first, everybody's like, you know, we're smaller than, you know, you guys in Bowling for Soup. So, like, no one knew who we were. But, like, I thought it was great.
I feel the struggle, you know, in the early days of Less Than Jake. It was like we'd play, you know, on bills with just ska bands. They'd had no distorted guitar. You know, it was all upstrokes and we were the black sheep. And then vice versa, we'd be on a punk bill, the only band with horns playing upstrokes. And it's like we were the black sheep there. So the struggle is absolutely real. You guys are just, you're a machine. You can tell that you've been cutting your teeth on the live circuit. The band is just absolutely a force to be reckoned with live, totally tight. And this song, Every Saturday Night, that we're going to talk about, it's interesting because I hadn't heard the recorded version. And when I started breaking it down, listening to it the past couple of days and really getting it under lock and key here, I was like, am I going crazy? Wait, they didn't just play this a little bit faster. It's a lot faster live. And I went, I looked up a video from Glasgow a couple weeks ago. And I got to ask, you know, live, you know, your adrenaline's up. Everything's pushed a little bit. But man, it is really pushed live. And I have to ask, is that because you were playing with some punk bands and you wanted a little bit of pizzazz and pep on it? Did you speed it up? Or is that how you usually play it?
I just think that's how we usually play it. We got a new drummer, which changes like everything. And Trey and I used to be in a punk band together before he joined Vandaliers. Yeah, once he joined the band, everything got more like oomph. But also, like, I am that kind of person where I push live.
Mm-hmm.
And in front of a sold out crowd. I mean, we don't have in-ears, you know, we have no click. It is just all feeling right now. And the feeling in a sold out room will push it. And it pushed.
Well, don't take it the wrong way, but it was pretty jarring. It was like, wow. Because again, you know, we tend to speed things up. Live is different than recorded. But a lot of times when I hear this happen, I won't like the live version or the recorded. I'll be like, whoa, why don't they do it the live way? Why don't they do it? And I think both of them, I say versions, both of them stand on their own, though. You know, where the tempo's at here, I think it's great. I found it interesting. I'm like, wow, they play this a lot faster live, but it definitely works there. It's so anthemic. Take us back to writing this track.
It was August 2020. We were in the thick of the pandy. Yeah, I think this is like right after we like thought we were going to get back, but then they were like, oh, just kidding. Like, mm-hmm. I'm in my music room study and I'm like, I got like one last song in me kind of thing. Not to sound like over dramatic, but like, I just felt like it was the end of the world at the time. I missed my other life. I missed my friends. I thought I was never going to get back, you know, let alone go on a UK sold out tour with Bowling for Soup and Less Than Jake just a couple years later. But like, I didn't see any of those things. I just saw brick wall again. So, and at the time I was, you know, some of the first lines are, I miss the taste of whiskey. I miss the smell of smoke. I was trying to quit, drinking and smoking cigarettes, failing miserably multiple times. I think during this, I was having a good run and just kind of a desperate, pretty desperate lyrics, pretty desperate times for me. And, I wrote it. And I wrote it in like 5 minutes, as some songs come about. You know, in my brain, it was like, I wanted to write a country song, but like, I'm really bad at writing country songs. So they always come out as like punk anthems or vice versa. I'm really bad at punk songs and they always come out as country songs. However you look at it, it just kind of came out. I knew it was a Vandalier song. And the band was, you know, we were in the middle of making a record. We lost our label, we lost our booking agent, and we were supposed to open for Flogging Molly for the first time, and that show got canceled. We had a big South by Southwest schedule canceled, European tour canceled, everything was canceled.
I think we may have been on those Flogging shows with you. Were they in August of 2020?
No, we were just going to play. We were the outdoor, check this out. So we were the outdoor band, one of five, on the outdoor stage of their St. Patrick's Day show. Like, technically not even playing with Flogging Molly.
Right.
Like, I had no idea what was going to happen.
We call that the parking lot slot, Josh.
Totally the parking lot slot. The opening parking lot slot.
Been there.
Yeah, man. But that was my big break, Chris. lost it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is we're being facetious, but that is a big break. And that's heartbreaking when that happens. It's interesting you say that this was written, well, not interesting that it was written quickly. We hear that a lot, but interesting that it was written in just such a downer of a time for you, because this is kind of like a party anthem to me, you know,
and seeing
it live, you know, people are dancing and singing by the second chorus.
Yeah. So like, how do you make yourself feel better? You know, this was kind of like, I wanted it to be like an appreciation, a gratefulness of it, a nostalgia as well. Like kind of a sadness that, you know, it's not there anymore. But when I did have it, it was great. It started with the chorus. And like the moment I had the chorus, then I had the verse.
Which the chorus and the verse, the whole song is so similar. But that's what to me is awesome about it. It takes me back to, it's got an 80s vibe. I'm going to throw them out there now. It's got an 80s thing. It's got like a Gaslight Anthem thing, which is a Springsteen kind of thing to it. I'm also hearing, this is the first thing that jumped out at me. Are you familiar with a band from Atlanta, Georgia called Driving and Crying?
Yes, I okay. love those guys.
Okay, because I hear that a lot in your vocal delivery. Like, oh. Who does this remind me of? Oh my gosh,
Kevin
it's Kevin Kinney. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm hearing a little John Snodgrass in there. All these kind of everything thrown into the blender. But at the end of the day, it sounds like your band. And again, this song, I love that a song can be coming from a place of heartache, but can still be uplifting. And it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like this song had to come out of you. It wasn't going to be this morose song. You were already morose and sad enough.
Yeah, I also like, I mean, I've said before, like, someone was going to write this song. Like, I did not, I felt like it was more of a download kind of thing than like an interpersonal thing. I really needed it. Like, I begged for that song and I got it. And when it happened, it was just like really cathartic. And it was kind of just that decision to keep going happened after that. So I posted that on Facebook. Just a video of it to make my friends feel better, because that was back when I was doing kind of Facebook Lives and stuff. And a lot of people were like, just go record it. And we had this band, John, who just gave us the $900 we needed to go record it. I had made a demo on Logic of like the entire song, like electric guitars, drums, all that stuff. And I sent it to the band because we couldn't rehearse because it was COVID. I was like, look, just if you just play what's on the demo, it'll be good. You know, I don't know if it'll be the best it could possibly be, but if you just do that, then everybody can come in. We can do this really quickly. No one gets sick. And we can see each other for a second and make a song. And we did. And like, it was so, like, even the recording studio session was like so easy. The whole thing was just, and not every song's like that.
No, well, I talked about a little bit ago about you guys. You could tell you've been out there on the circuit playing. You're a live band. And I get that vibe from this recording. You know, did you guys record it live together, at least the basic tracks?
Yeah.
You can feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's to a click and all that, but like it was done within a day, like less than 8 hours.
That's awesome. Well, the band is rounded out by Corey. He's kind of like your roving center fielder, the utility player, backing vocals.
My secret weapon.
Keyboards, trumpet, bass, harmonica. Dustin plays electric guitar and pedal steel. Trey on the drums. Travis on the fiddle.
Yes.
He's just a beast.
Yeah.
And the fiddle is so good in this song. I can't wait to talk about it. Mark rounds out the band on the bass. Your first album, Amerikinda, was released in 2016. The second record, The Native, was recorded in the same studio. This is cool. Where Willie Nelson made Redheaded Stranger. That record came out in May of 2017. Your third album, Forever, was released in 2019. And your fourth LP, the self-titled Vandaliers, on your newly formed label, Amerikinda, which was the name of your first record, came out in 2022. And that's the album that the song Every Saturday Night came from, was produced by Grammy-winning producer Eric Delgard. And this is interesting. Maybe you could shed some light. He had won a Grammy for the best polka album at the 47th Grammys. Was he like at the table next to Weird Al? Like,
probably.
How that's a very niche audience.
Yeah. There's a band called Brave Combo. They're from Denton, and they were kind of on the ska circuit back in the day, but they won a Grammy for a polka record and he produced it. Yeah. So yeah, good for him. It's heavy. I haven't held it, but it looks like it.
That is awesome. That's very cool. Well, we're going to jump into the track right now. The song is 2 minutes and 57 seconds. Every Saturday Night starts out. The intro is the chorus. Why not? Why not just hit him with the hook right off the top? This part just sounds honest to me. It's just an acoustic guitar and a vocal, but it kind of sets the tone and the mood.
I took for granted every Saturday night with my rowdy friends and the love of my life. We should have danced till they turned out the lights. I took for granted every Saturday night.
I took for granted every Saturday night with my rowdy friends and the love of my life. We should have danced till they turned out the lights. I took for granted every Saturday night.
Yeah, pretty simple. That's when I was like, fuck. And like, in every ounce of my being, I didn't know if I was ever going to get it back. And so I wrote that down, and it reminded me of going to dance halls with my wife, hanging out with my friends at bars, my old life back in in Dallas and Fort Worth, you know, proper, and like kind of the starting years of the band, because we were just about to be something. We had just done a tour. We just got signed to Bloodshot Records, which had, you know, Ryan Adams and a bunch of other big bands on it. And like we went out with this band Lucero, which was amazing. And then we went out with this band called Toadies in Texas. So we're like riding high on a bunch of like opening slots for the first time. And like all of that stopped. And so we just went from like some of the best times of my life where everything looked like it was about to be like ready to go to nothing. Mm. And yeah, kind of captured that right off the bat. That's when I'm like, okay, let's see what the verse says.
Well, you know, and I think everybody felt the same dread during that time period, especially my musician friends and people that do what we do. It felt like our arms and legs were cut off. It was just a horrible time. But looking back, just for me personally, I fell in love with music so hard again. And when I go out there every night, I'm kind of living this song. Yeah. You know, every Saturday night, I'm living a lot of what's said here. You know, I'm going out, and it's a different appreciation than I had. You know, I had been coasting when the pandemic hit. You know, we had been a band for 28 years, and it was just like, okay, when's the next tour happening?
Yeah,
you know, when's the plane leaving? When are we going? And I try to remember that feeling, and I definitely don't take it for granted. I appreciate it so, so much more. At the end of chorus one, the intro here, there's a guitar harmonic panned off right that then gets panned to the left, and this goes right into verse one. That harmonic panned off to the left trails off as verse one begins.
I miss the taste of whiskey. I miss the smell of smoke. Last calls at the dance halls. I miss the last songs before they close. You sing along the turnpike.
I miss the taste of whiskey, and I miss the smell of smoke. I miss the last calls at the dance halls. I miss the last songs before they closed. Used to sing along to Turnpike, heading down an FM road. I always took the long way. The sun rose before we got home.
Man, lots of memories. I did miss the taste of whiskey, and I did miss the smell of smoke at the time, literally and figuratively. But like, to me, I felt like that described the places we were playing at the time. We were playing dive bars. We were playing dance halls. Like, that's where we were hanging out at the time. And then staying out till the end, always kind of like that remorse for not being there long enough. You know, like if I could go back, I would have stayed. And then like, I love that I got to name drop Turnpike, because in Americana, in our genre, when Turnpike Troubadours broke up, I was there. I was supposed to play in Lincoln, Nebraska. I was supposed to play their after party. And that was the day they broke up. So they canceled the show. Oh. And we're supposed to be the after party at this giant fucking theater. And like the entire economy at the time of Americana music was based off of opening for Turnpike. Like if you opened for Turnpike, you were fine. It worked for so many bands on this agency, Red 11. It worked all the time. So we were like, we're going to play the after party for, you know, the parking lot slot of a Turnpike show, and we're at this theater, no one comes. It's like 8 people in a 2,000 cap. And so like to set that up, like when Turnpike Troubadours broke up, it was kind of like the Beatles broke up for Americana bands. It sucked, and it was right before the pandemic too, so I was listening to those records like all the time. And we did, like that was like Turnpike Troubadours is one of the bands that is such a huge influence on my band. And you know, lucky we've gotten to open for them too. It's been amazing. But that didn't happen until after I wrote this song.
The hits just kept on coming for you this time period. I mean, it was just one thing after the other.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's so silly kind of looking back, because like I had every reason to quit at the time, and I just like didn't, thankfully. It was just one of those things where we were you know, it just kind of kept trying to figure out how to do it. Like, we couldn't get a record deal, so we started our own label.
Yeah.
And put out a record, which was our most successful record to date. So go us, go band.
That's awesome. Well, verse one, acoustic guitar, bass, and drums are in for the first half. And, you know, I'm hearing a spread of acoustics left and right. Was that two tracks or was that a panning?
Yeah, it was the first time I doubled acoustic.
Hmm. Okay, so it sounds like it. And a lot of times when you do that, you'll get just a bad chorus-y, you know, I have to be mic'd correctly. And this sounds awesome. It's like stereo acoustic thing going on there. It sounded like two guitars.
Yeah, I don't know if I was very good at it, but it worked out. And the part's simple enough for me to just kind of double over it. But yeah, Eric asked me to double it, and I thought it sounded really good.
That's awesome. The way that it's mixed and it's spread out left and right is fantastic. Halfway through on the turnpike line, these overdriven guitars come in, like an arpeggiated, not super big stereo guitars yet. That's coming in the choruses. And the fiddle is in here. And you guys weren't shy about where you put it in the mix. Man, that fiddle comes out and just hits you.
Got to put the fiddle in the middle.
Put the fiddle in the middle. No, it's great. I love that because it's funny, when it comes in, it doesn't overtake everything. You know, it's not like really fighting for those kind of in its own frequency there. And it just really sticks out. It's really cool. The last line, the sun rose before we got home. There's a nice fiddle lead in to chorus two. Chorus two is the first full band chorus, big stereo guitars, bass, drums, fiddle, and piano. And the vocals are doubled here. And there is certain words that sound harmonized and other stuff that's unison. Was that intentional?
That might be a sign of a bad harmony track that worked out, but we didn't have much time. Like, I went in there, I did a full vocal pass, another one, maybe like two or three takes of just straight through. And then I went and doubled everything. And then I did a harmony line on top of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, so I'm hearing a double of the lead vocal and then there's a harmony. That harmony's really tucked though. You know, it's not. It's not. And I think that's why I thought that some stuff was rubbing, which is not bad. You know, I used to think, oh, if everything's not perfectly harmonized and has its own note, it's not a good harmony. That's not true. You know, a lot of times you'll sing something and there's notes in that are unison. And it adds to the whole thing. And most of the time it goes by so fast, a listener, you know, non-musicians aren't even going to know. But I love the subtlety of the harmony here.
Nice. Yeah. I had a full Logic demo, you know, of everything. It had harmonies, it had the guitar, had the whole thing. So I was pretty prepared to just go in there and just, you know, knock it out and get out of there without getting sick and getting my pregnant wife sick.
Right. So again, this was like, you had already had songs for the record.
Yes.
You were working on it.
The record that had no plan of getting out anywhere. No one was ever going to hear it, so I just kept writing.
Yeah. Well, and look what happened since.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, we got lots more with Josh Fleming coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Do you love to watch movies? Because I do. And if you're anything like me, you like to watch them in the theater. So Regal Unlimited just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just two visits. See any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets. You'll also save on snacks. Members get 10% off all non-alcoholic concession items. So, if you're planning to see two movies this month, you'll need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Use code DEMAKES24 to let them know we sent you. Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities. From easily paying collaborators with splits, to securing your music with DistroLock, DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
Hustling city to the rivers and tow, can it be?
And now, back to the show.
Verse 2 is right off of chorus 2, comes right out, and this verse is only a single verse this time. It's half as long as verse 1, and we get that overdriven arpeggiated guitar from verse 1 right off the top here.
Tailgate down around a bonfire, half a moonshine in a jar. You laid your head on my shoulder, we kissed beneath the Texas stars.
Tailgate down around a bonfire, apple moonshine in a jar. You laid your head on my shoulder, we kissed beneath the Texas stars. You like moonshine?
I did. there was this lady that used to bring apple moonshine in a jar to shows. And Dustin, my guitar player, her name was Nikki, and she used to come to like our rock shows and stuff. So I had put that in there. He knew exactly who I was talking about and what I was talking about. And then tailgate down, you know, around a bonfire is just like Texas is shit. That's just fun. And it's something like I used to do in high school. I feel like each one of those lines is a different memory that I was kind of, you know, going through. And I loved it. They all moved together, but it's kind of like a list of other things I missed. It all ran together to make a story that sounds like a character, but it's more than that. Like I was thinking about a lot of different moments in my life.
Well, on the second line, apple moonshine in a jar, there's a nice fiddle fill there, as well as the fourth line, we kiss beneath the Texas stars. There's a fiddle lead that goes into chorus 3. And moonshine, we used to have these kids show up in North Carolina when we were first starting, and they would brew their own, or, you know, make their own moonshine. And it looked like gasoline. It had like that kind of, I don't know, what opaque color or whatever. And you could hardly swallow it. It was like fire, but it did the trick.
Yeah, the apple cinnamon helps. Yeah, she would put an apple and a cinnamon stick in it, so it looked like something your like great aunt would give you at Christmas.
Yeah.
But then it was just like wild after that.
If the two dudes from North Carolina that made the moonshine for us are listening or are out there, free tickets on me to the next show. Just don't bring the moonshine. Chorus 3, right off of verse 2. Again, we get that fiddle lead in.
Saturday night.
And the lyric here is the same, and it's the same basic instrumentation, but we get a double chorus this time around for chorus three. And the piano seems a bit louder here, Josh, in the mix on the back half of chorus three. It sounds like there's more vocals as well and slightly more harmonies, like the mix is growing. Was that talked about or discussed?
No, I mean, like, at the time, I pretty much just gave Eric carte blanche to mix it. We couldn't go anywhere. So it was like, once we were done, we all got kind of shooed out a little bit. And then we all gave each other hugs, and then we were like, I hope it sounds good. Like, bolted. We have six people in the band, and I know for a fact that we're kind of a kitchen sink band sometimes. And so it's better when in our mixing moments of taking away stuff and, you know, instead of adding. So we can get pretty grandiose pretty quickly. So I assume he held off on the piano part on the first chorus and added the piano part into the second chorus.
Well, the piano part is there on what is chorus two. The first chorus is just you alone. But here, no, I'm definitely hearing the piano. It just sounds like it's possibly a little louder. And I love that in mixing. I love little subtleties. You know, you'll see a song get big. Sometimes it happens in reverse. I've had it where you're looking at the first chorus going, wait, there's more vocals here than the second. Why would you do that? It's like, it just sounded right. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. The magic part.
Yeah, the further along I get into this podcast in particular, but songwriting is just like, it just trips me out. It never ceases to amaze me. I learn something every day.
Yeah.
I'll never be able to write a book about songwriting because I don't know anything about it. As much as I think I do, I don't know a darn thing, and I'm fine with that. I wanna continue to learn.
Yeah, same. That's kind of my lesson for the day today. I've been really, really lucky to have some mentors like in this past 10 years of being in Vandaliers. Rhett Miller from All 97s is probably one of my biggest mentors, especially as a songwriter. And, you know, one of my favorite things about him was like, you know, he would always say, like, try to write a line that's never been written before. And usually they're the most simple things, you know. Those are the lines that you're like, fuck, I wish I would have wrote that, you know. With this song, I really had to try to relax and let it out the way that it comes out. Apple Moonshine in a Jar kind of feels like John Cougar Mellencamp, kind of. That was like my aunt's favorite band, so besides Bon Jovi, which is probably the other 80s part you're feeling.
Well, I mean, and you guys are just undeniably Texas. You know, it's like, it's funny to me that, yeah, we could have brought you on a U.S. tour, Jarrett could have, but no, it's like, we're gonna take them to the U.K. and in the biggest market for both of our bands and throw them out there. And at that point, it's like, okay, these guys definitely aren't from here.
Yeah. I know. And like the moment we get there, everybody knows that we're the weird one.
They got the fiddle player. See, we're usually the weird ones. We got the horns. See, yeah. you guys were the odd man out. You had the fiddle.
Yeah. One of the first shows I said was we may be the only country band here, but we're not the only ska band. So, you know, like it worked out. We were just playing an outlaw country cruise before we went to the UK. So we were playing with like Lucinda Williams and Steve Earle and Blackberry Smoke and Nikki Lane, having a great time playing the exact same set. And then we go over to the UK and you guys gave us 30 minutes to define our band. And, you know, we did it rather quickly. We did eight songs in 30 minutes and, you know, had a great time.
The opening slot, 30 minutes, it's a feat.
I love
to be
it.
Able to accomplish. Yeah, you got to prove yourself. You got to smack them in the nose as hard as you can. And you definitely have to work for that first position. But as I said earlier, you guys were killing it. You know, it was it's always a tough spot to be in. People aren't, you know, the booze isn't flowing just quite yet. And, you know, they're waiting for their friend to get there and whatever else is going on. And you guys did fantastic in that. The mentioned about chorus three again, it sounds like the production, like little things and flourishes, are getting a little bit louder before we get right into the bridge. And I'm calling this the bridge. I'm not calling this verse three, okay? Even though it's pretty much the third verse, but it's a little bit of a departure because the band breaks down to drums, bass, acoustic guitar, and piano here. It's just, I wrote in the notes, it's just such a good vibe, this part. And this part really sounds Americana, Springsteen, like Jersey to me. This just, I don't know. And I'm a sucker for that sound. It just makes me feel good. Oh man, that piano, the bass is just, you know, there's just, I don't know. It's just apple pie and baseball. There's just something about that sound that just hooks me every time. I should have sang a little louder. I should have sang a little louder. I should have stayed a little longer, I suppose. I should have told you I loved you. I was young, darling. I didn't know.
That's my Springsteen line right at the end. I love singing that.
And were you telling the music and your career that you loved them, or who were you telling?
Everyone. Stage, we could do this thing. We didn't have time to do this, but we, you know, when it says, I should have told you I loved you, we all get off the mic and say I love you to the crowd. And the people that have seen us a million times will also say it as a callback. I try to connect with people. Like, I try to take that moment where there's no dead time, but I have a moment to be like, I'm no different than you. I'm doing this thing that I've always wanted to do. I hope that this inspires you to go do whatever you want to do. You know, have no fear kind of thing.
The bridge, I got to ask you, you know, there's, besides the choruses, and they're very subtle, if there was a spot to maybe put some vocal harmonies, it could have been here. Was this just so quick and it just happened that you didn't even really get to? A lot of times those backing vocals and overdubs and those things will happen, you know, a week later. You're sitting on it. You've already moved on to other songs. You're like, wait a second, I want to go back. But it doesn't sound like you guys had that luxury this time.
No, it was every bit of just go in there and lay down a song just for it to exist. We had enough for one day or for one song. And Eric was giving us the brother-in-law prices because he's a sweetheart and he's worth exponentially more than we paid him at the time. But he also knew that we could go in and just lay it down and it wouldn't be much huffle and puffle about the whole thing.
Well, I mean, you guys, again, I'll give a nod to being a live band. You can just hear it and you guys are tight as all get out. But tip of the hat to Eric Delagarde. I mean, the recording sounds awesome.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it competes with anything that's on the radio or anything that's out there. It sounds amazing. On the line, I should have told you I loved you. There's a guitar pick like scrape noise that goes from right to left. On the last line, I was young, darling, I didn't know. We get the huge pick slide, the nod to Bon Jovi to the 80s, the huge pick slide starting panned off left and goes to the right, goes right into chorus four. We get a double chorus again. Same basic instrumentation and lyrics as the previous choruses. Hit him over the head. No lyric change up. When you think of those songs, you know, I fought the law and the law won and I'll fight authority, but authority always wins. It's the same lyric. Born in the USA, it's the same lyric over and over and over again. Was there a discussion about maybe changing up the back half here or no? We want it to be this.
There was no discussion. There was no time. You know, I gave him the demo and we essentially just did the demo and I was like, I was just really happy with it. I don't know. I just thought, like, when I was done with the song in August and I put it on Facebook in maybe September, I was just like, you know, still bummed out. Had to be like maybe a week later or whatever, you know, just confident enough to play it for my friends. And everybody was just like, you should record it. I think we even recorded it in November. So I think it was just like 1 month I wrote it. The next month I let people hear it. the next month I found the money to go record it. And then the next month I got to record it. It was just really quick. And then by January we put it out.
Do you ever feel like you can muck stuff up though by overthinking it and maybe being too highbrow? Like there's got to be another lyric here at the end of the song. I feel like I've done that, and you know this might have been a case of one of those songs I probably would have said the back half of it. But again, talking about those blueprint songs that you know I Fought the Law and things like that of this type of song, the hook has to hit you. It's not going to change.
I just didn't really. I didn't scrutinize back then. I was just happy that, like I said, it felt more like a download than a me thing.
Yeah.
Like, not to get too magical about it, but that's just kind of how it was. I didn't really feel like I needed to change anything. Zero people told me to change anything. Everybody was just like, this song made me cry. You know, like,
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
when great. It was done, I sent it to my old publicist, and he pretty much told me that. He was like, this song made me cry. Can I show it to Rolling Stone? And I was like, yeah. And then Rolling Stone wrote about it. And then I got a call.
Yeah, I saw that.
I got a call from Outlaw Country and from Elizabeth Cook. And she was all like, hey, can I play the song? I was like, well, it's not out for like another 2 weeks. And she's like, can I play it? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I guess she just pressed play when she got off the phone. And like everybody was talking to me about it being on that satellite radio station. So there was no marketing for it. I had no budget. I think I gave Rob like a couple $100 for being, for throwing me an absolute solid, you know?
Yeah.
But, like it wasn't like a label put it out. We just put it out.
I love it. I love that it's kind of become your signature song. I mean, it's just, it's blown up for you guys. It's got more plays than your other tracks. And that wasn't the only reason. Again, it was because I saw the song live. It wasn't a surprise to me that this was one of your more popular tracks. Off of chorus four, we go into an outro. And, you know, there's only two different chord progressions for the whole song. We get a little bit of a change up here on the outro. On the first, second, and fourth times, it's D, A, E, to back to A chords. But on the third time, instead of going back to the A chord, we go to the F sharp minor and the vocal goes up there. I love that. And I'm a sucker for those little nuances. I love the little change up there. It's awesome. There you have it, man. I mean, I love when I write something and I'm that confident of it. Very rarely have I ever given it to my band and they didn't want to put their fingerprints on it or do something to it. There's always something. It's never, here's this idea, and they're like, it's perfect. There's always one word or something, and it sounds like you hit a home run with this one.
Yeah, very grateful that I had a band that was agreeable. I think we all just wanted to do something, you know, and I don't think anybody really had the energy to fight anything. And I had a really pretty vivid blueprint for everybody to just kind of do it. So we didn't have to rehearse, and that we didn't have to stay in the studio for very long. All of it was kind of like preservation too, because I just didn't want anybody to get sick over this song either. But yeah, I don't know. I got lucky on this one. We just did 2 weeks in the studio where I scrutinized over every single line multiple times. And I think all of those songs got better. So I don't know. I think there's always whatever the song needs, do it.
Yeah, it's what the song calls for. I've always said that you can't, no two songs are the same. And some you beat your head against the wall, and other ones turn out like this, where it's just this idea that the spark happened and you were creative that day and found yourself in the studio and all the stars lined up. Eric produced the heck out of this song. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Before we break, what do you got for everyone listening? What's coming up with yourself, the Vandaliers?
Oh, man. Well, we just did this pre-sale for a record that doesn't exist yet. Like we got done with your tour, which was like, I don't know how the fuck we're going to get home. And we got home, and we have Ted Hutt, another Grammy winning producer, you know, Gaslight Anthem, 59 Sound, Drunken Lullabies, Vlogging Molly, the last decade of Dropkick Murphys, Lucero, a trilogy of records.
Boss Tones. He's done a bunch of bands. Boss
Tones. He's amazing. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And he wanted to make a record with us. So we got the money. Our fans just are the best fans in the world and supported us straight through the 1 month pre-sale. We started it 20 days before we were supposed to walk into the studio. So like no deposits, no plane tickets, no guarantee that it's even going to work. And it all worked out. We were there for 15 days at Sonic Ranch. Was magical. It's an amazing studio. And we released two songs that Ted produced, Together We Will Sink or Swim and Nobody's Fault But My Own, as like a little mini EP to kind of be like, hey, here's two songs that, you know, stand on their own. And, you know, we have recordings. We did these, you know, very quickly in LA, kind of like how we did every Saturday night, where we had 2 days to record two songs. And we went in and we put out two awesome sounding bangers.
And that's awesome.
We also got to play those. We got to play one of those songs on our tour as well. And it was great.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, thanks for taking the time to sit here and talk to me. I'm totally stoked for you guys and wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you, Chris. It's good seeing you again. Hopefully we see each other around.
Hey everybody, the song you're hearing right now is The Vandaliers, Together We Will Sink or Swim. Make sure you go check that out, plus the entire Vandaliers catalog wherever you listen to music. And don't go anywhere, we got lots more Chris to Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Early Autumn Station, a five-piece rock band from Chicago, Illinois, who've been melting living rooms and libraries around the area since 2014. You can find them on all the socials and Bandcamp. Here's a snippet of their song, Silkworm.
Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So Chris, the silver lining of the terrible time that we all went through is not only some great music that was written during that time, but also everybody can relate to the extra appreciation of now when we can go out and be in a room full of people again. And I think this song is just a celebration of that.
Yeah, I think it encapsulates that perfectly. As I said in the episode, you know, we were just running for 28 years, tour, record, tour, record, tour, record. And, you know, I didn't think I was burned out. I didn't think that I was jaded and, you know, not interested in music and all these other words, but I think I was. And, you know, when I got to go play that first show back, which was with Punchline, as a matter of fact,
in
the middle of a field in 2021, the feeling was pretty much indescribable.
Yeah. Yeah. We all felt that. Not just people in bands. I think everybody felt that, being able to go to, I don't know, a room full of people, a concert, anything, any sort of event, and be with friends and family again. I think we all felt that extra appreciation. I feel that coming through in this song. It does feel like a celebration. I didn't get to see it live every night like you did on that tour, Chris, but one of the first things you talked about was speeding up live. Now, back in the day, boy, oh boy, was my band guilty of speeding up live from the recording. That was back before we played to a click. Nowadays, we play to a click. You do not play to a click, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I don't know if you could put our band on a click, what we do. You know, and I think that's some of the reason why our recordings have just never, to this day, people feel like, you know, we're just way more of a live band. It's hard to harness, you know. I think part of our magic is those mistakes and those rushes, and those mistakes and rushes don't necessarily sound good in other bands.
Right. I mean, there's pros and cons to using the click live. You can make a really good argument for using one, and you can make a really good argument for not using one. And it just varies band by band and what feels right to you. Yeah, I don't think Less Than Jake should play to a click. And for my band, I think it works. But in this instance, we're talking about the Vandaliers. You know, I didn't get to see it, but I guess it was a dramatic speed up live. There was a lot of energy.
Yeah, it almost made me feel like they didn't like the way the recording came out, which is not the case. I mean, it is drastically quicker. If you're listening, go check out the show from Glasgow. When did we do that? Yeah, it was February of 2024, the Glasgow show, and they play this song. It's like, wow. And didn't think anything of it until I got here to break it down the past couple of days. I had not heard the studio version of the track, and I was like, wow, but I love it. This sounds great, which begs the question, what is a hit song? You know, Vandaliers are at this point a little lesser known band, but I don't know. What if some huge alt country or country pop star were to do this song? Is it a hit? Because it's catchy as all get out.
Sure. That's a rabbit hole we could go down forever. What makes a song a hit? Is it a lucky break? It gets used in a commercial or a movie or something. Then all of a sudden your band is huge. You get on the right tour. You get in front of the right people. Yeah. I mean, isn't that the question we're all trying to figure out in bands?
Well, you know, but this kind of hit me over the head this was the song. Yeah. They only had a 30 minute set, like Josh said. That was it. They had to go out and prove themselves. But this was heads above the, and no disrespect to their other songs. They got some great tunes, but this song, when they would play it, it's just something about it. The audience would react to it every night.
Right. And like you said, probably most of these people at these shows, Vandaliers were a new band to them. So this song translated to people that may have not even known the band yet.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly it. I don't, you know, I can't speak for exactly how many fans they had at these shows. They were large shows, but it wasn't a lot of people. You know, you could tell, and they wanted to be on a big tour like this and get seen, which takes us back to what he was talking about, and the, you know, inspiration for the song was just bred out of this heartache. I mean, they had a lot of good things happening. They were touring with Corey Brannan, Lucero. They were doing, you know, I think they were on the Outlaw Cruise, which is like an alt-country rock cruise that they were doing. A bunch of stuff was happening with the band, and they had had the plug pulled on them and kind of was questioning whether they wanted to do this. And perseverance, man. They didn't have a label. They said, we feel something here. We have to get in a room together. They cut the song, and it's become their most popular tune.
Now more than ever, if you are a good band and you have fans, I love the story about that Ted Hutt wanted to produce the album and they didn't have the money for it, and the fans came together to help them make the album. When it all comes down to it, you do it for the people who support you and love your music. I think that's awesome. Now more than ever, you can do that.
Absolutely. And now more than ever, Chris, we can lean on to our fans, those of you who listen to Krista Makes a Podcast. Chris, what can they do for us?
Wow, that was a nice segue, Chris. Congrats on that one. One thing you could do doesn't cost a penny is go to Apple Podcasts and leave Krista Makes a Podcast a review, a 5-star review, and you could write a little review too. And Chris, I wanted to read you a couple of really nice reviews from some really nice people.
I would love to hear them.
One of those, it says essential listening, and this is from John Zaremba, who said, "For anyone who loves music and anyone interested in songcraft, Chris is a great host because he guides the show along and lets his guests speak without making it all about himself. Very entertaining and informative." Pretty nice.
Wow, that was very, very nice.
Pretty nice. I got one more for you here, Chris, too. This one's from Jerry Arboretum, and he said, "Just found it and love it already after about 5 episodes. Chris is so enthusiastic and great at drawing out details from the artists about production choices, lyrics, and structure. If he's covering a song you love, there are a lot here to choose from, and you geek out on this like I do, it's a great podcast."
Thanks, well, Jerry. Well, thank you so much, Jeffrey, for saying
Jerry,
that.
Jerry.
Oh, Jerry.
Well, thanks to all the Jeffreys out there, too.
Yeah, thanks to the Jeffreys and the Jerrys. Yeah. I was going to say edit that, but why would we?
Why would we?
Why would we? We're gonna hit you with warts and all today here on Krista Makes a Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, as always. You can find us on the socials. You can find out about our supporting cast, which is our VIP program, over at KristaMakes.com. You'll figure it out. Thanks for all your support, and I want to thank this week's guest, Mr. Josh Fleming, for sitting in with us, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, Krista Makes a Podcast producer, Chris Fafalius here. You may have heard me talk about my band Punchline before. Maybe you already know us, or maybe you're hearing about us for the first time right now. It doesn't matter. No matter what your relationship with Punchline is, I will absolutely guarantee that you'll love our new podcast, A Band Called Punchline. Starting with our humble beginnings in a small town in southwestern Pennsylvania in 1997, we're telling the hilarious, strange, and hopefully inspiring story of the 25 plus years of our band in the most honest way possible, podcast style. A Band Called Punchline is an audio documentary available now wherever you get your pods. So subscribe and let me and my friends share a wild, entertaining, unique, and wonderful tale of music and perseverance unlike any other that's still being written today.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band, or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.